U.S. relations with other nations, including our neighbor to the south, Mexico, are at least temporarily in flux thanks to some decisions in the early stages of the Trump administration. But a lot of other international news, of course, is going on this week. And with a preview of some of those stories, I'm joined by the BBC's Rob Hugh Jones. Rob, thanks as always.
That's a pleasure.
And Rob, let's begin in Myanmar. Some important information is expected to come out tomorrow.
Yeah, what we're looking for this week, Steve, is an official commission that was set up by Aung San Suu Kyi, who's the de facto leader in Myanmar, after, if you remember, years and years of military dictatorship. She was under house arrest. She's seen as the kind of democrat, the human rights activist, and so on, famous throughout the world. And now she's effectively leading that country with some provisos. But there is a problem, and the problem is that up in the north, there is an area called Rakhine State. In that state, there's a Muslim majority ethnic population. They're called the Rohingyas. They claim they're being persecuted by the state, by the security forces. And this is a big problem for Myanmar because effectively, under the transition to democracy, they said they will deal with the problems associated with that country and ethnic minorities. This is something that President Obama brought world attention to when he visited the country back in 2012. Listen to what he said then.
Our goal is to sustain the momentum for democratization. That includes building credible government institutions, establishing rule of law, ending ethnic conflicts, and ensuring that the people of this country have access to greater education, healthcare, and economic opportunity.
So ending ethnic conflicts, giving people opportunities, all that kind of thing, all the sort of thing that the Rohingya people up in the north there near the border with Bangladesh say they're not getting. And so what we're seeing this week is an official commission report Aung San Suu Kyi got going that will look into this. However, I should just tell you, Steve, quickly that the commission lacks some credibility. There are no Rohingya members on that commission. There are ex-military. There are people who generally you would half expect at least to be protecting their past. And the past has generally been not to look after these people very well.
And Rob, coming up on Wednesday, an uncomfortable anniversary for many. It'll mark the first anniversary of the Zika virus being declared a global emergency by the World Health Organization. We heard a lot about Zika, of course, during the Olympic Games. We haven't heard quite as much since then. What can you update us on there?
Yeah, so let's just remind ourselves, Zika was a mosquito-borne virus, and it was linked to a condition called microcephaly, which caused babies to be born with head and brain defects. You might remember those pictures of the babies with abnormally small heads. Now, Zika wasn't just confined to Brazil. It affected something like 30 countries around the world, including America, of course. But Brazil is really, really the fulcrum of Zika. So what we have now is that although it spread very rapidly in Brazil, although it affected an awful lot of people, things seem to have been quietening down. What might be slightly different for your listeners is that Zika is not actually the health emergency that Brazilians are worried about right now. It's actually yellow fever. Listen to this from Candace Piet, who's our America's editor.
Brazilian public health officials are working hard to contain an outbreak of yellow fever that has killed 40 people. They've confirmed 70 other cases and are investigating hundreds more.
So actually, yellow fever is the problem at the moment. The authorities there have ordered around 12 million doses of yellow fever vaccine. This is not just affecting rural areas. There are cases in big cities, big conurbations like São Paulo as well. So we're keeping a sharp eye on that.
Rob, let's close with a visit that U.S. Defense Secretary James Mattis is taking later this week to South Korea and then Japan. A few months ago, people may have thought this was just sort of an average trip, but with the Trump administration, may have turned into anything but. What should we be looking for there?
Nothing is average anymore, is it? Yes, U.S. Defense Secretary James Mattis heading to South Korea and then to Japan. The Pentagon said this trip will underscore the commitment of the U.S. to America's enduring alliances. So Japan and South Korea are, of course, two critical U.S. allies in the Pacific. And President Trump, had he just gone along with that, we wouldn't be talking about it. But in the campaign for the election, he said that Tokyo and Seoul should pay more for the thousands of American troops stationed in their countries. And just to be clear, there are some 50,000 U.S. troops in Japan, around about 30,000 in South Korea. So we're talking about very significant numbers. So it's interesting because the U.S., of course, is a major power in the Pacific. Japan and South Korea rely on U.S. power, as do others in the area. What's going on in the Pacific right now is a little shaky. China, of course, is flexing its muscles. It's claiming territory in the South China Sea that is disputed territory. Every now and again, a U.S. warship sails close to those islands to remind the Chinese. So there's quite a lot going on there. So to see the new defense secretary visiting those major allies in the Pacific after what President Trump said on the campaign trail is something we will definitely be keeping an eye on.
The BBC's Rob Hugh Jones helping us preview some of the most significant stories coming up internationally. Rob, thank you.
Absolute pleasure.